With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey everyone, it's host Bobby Sylvester and this is the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. A large part of the reason we can continue to provide free content is because our sponsors. So please be sure to help the show by supporting our sponsors. The sponsor of today's show is PlayDraft. If you play daily fantasy, you should check out Draft. They found a way to make daily fantasy more enjoyable for everyone by letting you draft your teams in a snake draft like the ones we do at the beginning of our season-long leagues. You can draft whenever you want, and the teams only last for 1 week. It only takes a few minutes to complete, and it's an absolute blast. It really is. On Draft, you can play for free, play for real money, and get this, your chances of winning on Draft are almost 200% better than your chances of winning playing salary cap daily fantasy. I have the Draft app on my phone and just did an 8-team draft. I drew the third pick and nabbed DeMarco Murray against the Colts this week. Join me by downloading Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store. It's going to come up first, and be sure to enter the promo code FANTASYPROS when you download, and you'll get a 100% deposit bonus. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code FANTASYPROS, all one word. All right, now on over to some fantasy football. Welcome back for another ranking episode. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and this is the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Our guest today is friend of the show, Mike Tagliere of ProFootballFocus.com. Hey, Mike, thanks for coming on.
No, thanks for having me. It's definitely a big news week, so I'm sure we're going to talk about some of those things, cover some Week 11 action. I'm looking forward to it.
So, Mike, one of those big stories I heard when I was driving home in the car the other day, and it's that Christian Michael was dropped. I couldn't believe it. I had to stop, tweet it out, talk to the people at my work about it because I was just so amazed. What are they doing dropping this guy?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I saw it and I was just like, I don't know if I expected it, but it was definitely weird timing how all of a sudden they didn't even see if Rawls was out there and he was okay. It was just more like, okay, Rawls is healthy, you're out of here. But it really was awkward timing. I figured they would have at least given it a week to see how Rawls did. I don't know what the harm was keeping four running backs on the roster. Alex Collins, I mean, that just shows that they like Alex Collins more than they do Christian Michael, which is kind of odd to me.
It's very odd. I mean, if you look at what Christian Michael's been doing, his stats really aren't that great, but behind this offensive line, let me just say this. It's the worst offensive line in football. Jeff Ratcliffe over there at Pro Football Focus, he always does this this statistic that I love to reference in the show, yards per carry before contact. That shows how talented an offensive line is, and Seattle's 32nd in the NFL. They allow less than 1 yard per carry before contact, and Christian Michael's still been putting up mediocre numbers. He could go to a different team and be really useful in the right situation.
I agree. And that's what a lot of friends have asked me, where do I see him ending up? And, the logical place would be the Packers, but I don't know if they're going to, I don't know what the waiver order is and who's got first dibs at it. Cause Christian Michael's it's not like he's very expensive to sign. So, I'm curious to see where he lands. There might be teams like the Colts that might be interested in him, teams that are going to make a playoff push. So, I mean, I'm interested. I'll say that I wouldn't drop Christian Michael yet. I'd wait and see where he goes, but yeah, that offense offensive line in Seattle is graded the worst at Pro Football Focus, and it's really not even that close. So for people to judge Russell Wilson in the first half of the season almost wasn't fair, because just how bad that offensive line was, and without his mobility, it's hard to make anything happen. So,
you know, and I was reading, and I understand this is controversial, but it makes a lot of sense to me. I was reading that you guys named Russell Wilson the midseason MVP because that offensive line is so bad, and what he's doing despite that offensive line, and he's had a brace like everywhere on his body. He's a phenomenal football player. He is really something else.
He's so fun to watch, honestly. And like, it stunk to watch him, like, you know, struggle just a little bit with the offensive line without having his legs. With, he was like a giant roll of duct tape on the field. I wish they would have just held him out, but I think it was his pride that kind of got in the way, and that he wanted to keep going. And I get it. He's a hard worker. Understand it. But at some point you have to say, are you costing your team wins? And, you know, seeing that what that offensive line is graded by our analysts, no, it may have not been on him. It's just more the mobility that was limiting him from actually making plays, giving him time to make those plays. Because as we've seen over the last couple of weeks, he's thrown for over 600 yards. He's got 5 touchdowns. He's back to being Russell Wilson again.
So what happens here with this Seattle backfield? Procise was really good last week against the defending AFC champs, but is he going to keep getting carries, or does Thomas Rawls step in and get a lot of first and second down touches?
I do think that Thomas Rawls is going to come in and see a lot of the first and second down work. The only thing that concerns me is obviously the offensive line. It hasn't gotten any better. So they're going to use Procise more as a receiver. I know in the preseason they were talking about it a lot, to using him lining up as a wide receiver, because if you recall, he was a wide receiver for a portion of his college career. So he's more than capable of doing that. The part where people are kind of overlooking is that Procise isn't a great pass blocker, which is going to keep him off the field on first and second down. Whereas Rawls, you know, we saw last year, the kid can do it. Like, you wondered if the ankle injury was going to limit him. Obviously, by the releasing of Christian Michael, they've seen something in him that makes them feel good about Rawls going forward. So for me, I think it's Rawls. But if you look at their upcoming schedule, their schedule is not great. For me, like, I'm okay with Procise, but if anybody tells you that they know how this is going to shake out, I think they're lying to themselves, because it's really just a difficult situation to predict, because they have moved more towards a passing offense, you know, whereas with Lynch, they were more of a run first offense. And, you know, I just don't, with the way the schedule lines up, it would make sense for them to pass a lot more in the coming weeks. So for me, I think Rawls is going to turn out to be a kind of like that low end RB2, whereas Procise is going to be a very solid flex and maybe even an RB2 in PPR leagues.
You know, I was hyping up both their upside in the preseason, but what it comes down to is I don't want to own anyone behind this offensive line. I mean, Russell Wilson's a different kind of story, but for a running back, their upside is just, it's just limited. It just is. And so I'm avoiding them both. Obviously, if you have to play them, I think Procise is a good start for one more week in your flex spot. I wouldn't play Rawls until we see just how much they're going to use him. But after that, yeah, you've got the green light on him. And I don't think you're going to be excited about what you find, though.
No, I agree with you. And it's funny that you actually mentioned the whole entire thing, because me, I came out with my fantasy stock market. It came out yesterday morning, and my advice in there, and that was before Christian Michael was cut. So it wouldn't really change too much, but I said that I would trade away both of them if you have them, just because I'd rather get rid of the headache, because the schedule that's upcoming, not knowing how they're going to distribute carries. We know Rawls can catch balls out of the backfield too. So yeah, it's just one where I'd rather just avoid the headache, and just if you can get top dollar for them, awesome. I mean, you don't just give them away, but you could probably get a decent coin for them right now.
So Seattle absolutely lit up Rob Gronkowski last week, and I feel bad for laughing, but it was just an amazing hit. It turns out he has a punctured lung. That is pretty serious. Now, they're saying he might just miss 1 week, but I'm not buying that at all. He's going to be out for a while, right?
No, what's funny is, fortunately, I have a nurse as a wife. And so when she got home yesterday, I brought up the whole Gronkowski thing. I was like, he's got a punctured lung. She's like, no, he doesn't. And I said, what are you talking about? Everybody's reporting that he's got a punctured lung. And she's like, he would have to have a cracked rib in order to do that. And they would report cracked ribs. It's more of likely a collapsed lung, which just basically the air was let out of it. She's like, he can recover soon from that. A punctured lung would require something to puncture it. So he would have had a fracture in his rib. So, like, I'm not kidding. I had this conversation with her. I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe he does. And Adam Schefter came out 2 hours later and said, it's not a punctured lung. He does have a lung injury. They expect him to be back within like a week. And she said that that's absolutely correct, that he's probably just going to miss 1 week. So fortunately, my wife, she seems to be smarter than I am. And she explained to me that Twitter doesn't know everything. And so Rob Gronkowski, it should be just 1 week. Unfortunately for him, it's going to be against the 49ers. So Martellus Bennett steps in as the guy you have to play.
Man, that's a great story, by the way. Yeah. But I tell you what, even if I was Rob Gronkowski with that huge body, I think I would just stop playing football forever. That is really scary.
It is. It is. But I mean, that guy lives and breathes football. He's a fun individual. I know a lot of people say he's immature and this and that, but I'd rather watch him go out there and have fun every single week than watch someone that's just strictly business all the time. He's so fun to watch, and he's just a monster. It's impossible to defend a guy that's that athletic at standing at 6'7" like that. Guys at 6'2" don't move the way he does, which is just it's crazy. But yeah, I enjoy watching him, so I hope he plays for a long time. There was a rumor that he might stop after getting 69 touchdowns.
Oh, you know, the thing about Gronk is, like, when he gets worked up, when a team like the Cincinnati Bengals is talking big time trash to him, he just takes it to another level and then some. So I'm always rooting for someone to do something dirty against him so that he can, you know, really turn it up. And we can see something that we've never seen in football before. He is truly a unique talent.
He really is. He's unstoppable. Like, it's just something that you can't do. Even if you put your best corner on him, corners are typically, you know, right around that 6 foot mark, 5'10". Good luck. That's basically all I have to say. With Tom Brady as his quarterback, it's kind of ridiculous. And people forget too that Rob Gronkowski is also one of the best blocking tight ends in football. Like, it's not like he actually is the best blocking tight end in football. So it's not just he's a great receiver, but he's in all facets of the game. He's the best tight end that I've ever seen play the game.
I wasn't even aware of that. It's just absolutely incredible watching this guy. Now, Jordan Howard for the Chicago Bears, he left the game with maybe an ankle and Achilles injury. We don't exactly know what it was because they're not talking at all. John Fox hasn't given us any news. Is this something fantasy owners should be worried about? And if so, who's going to get the carries?
No, you shouldn't be worried about it because John Fox came out afterwards and he said that, and it got everybody worried. And then just literally minutes later, Jordan Howard was interviewed and he said, I ain't had no injury or so. I don't know the way he said it, but the way he said it was basically that he is not hurt. He doesn't know what John Fox is talking about. And this just goes back to John Fox. I don't know what's going on in Chicago, but something weird's going on there between, you know, the rumors leaking that John Fox said that he was done with Jay Cutler while he was injured and that he wasn't going to play him again. The only reason that he did was because Hoyer, broke his arm and is out for the year. And then to hear about this thing, it's almost like John Fox has lost this team. And I, as a Bears fan, because I'm originally from Chicago, I never wanted the Fox hire to begin with. He was a 500 coach before. I mean, not even 500 coach before.
He won Peyton with Manning. Tim Tebow though.
He did. But if you look at that defense in Denver, it was something magical. And if you look at, I mean, obviously they won last year, they won the Super Bowl, and they did it, or not last year. If you go back with Peyton Manning, it was last year. Oh my God. I'm losing track of time here. But when you see like kind of everything that's transpired with that team, I don't know. John Fox in Carolina was just not someone that I looked at as like a must-have coach. And now with Cutler struggling after this game, everybody wants to blame him. But at the same time, I think John Fox has just lost track of this team. I don't even think he knows what's going on anymore. And I'm not worried about Jordan Howard. He did practice today in full. I read that report from, I think, Zach Zaidman just moments ago. So Jordan Howard looks like he's going to be fine. He's going to play.
Now, Deion Lewis, he was back last week, but he didn't play at all. Can you tell us what's going on here?
Well, the thing is, I've been warning people about Deion Lewis in that even when he does come back, we don't even know if he would be the same player. It's been a really, really weird rehab for him. Obviously, there was something wrong with the surgically repaired knee that they needed to go back in there and do something else. And now that it took him a while to practice. He didn't practice right away when he was able to come off the PUP list. So it took longer than it should have. In the meantime, James White has been playing really good football. Like, if you've been able to watch the Patriots game, like, as I go back and I watch all these games, and James White is, he's a very, very good football player. And Deion Lewis, he can run the ball well, he can receive well, but I think that he's caught in the middle here, whereas James White might be a better receiver than him, and LeGarrette Blount is running the ball extremely well. So I don't think that they're going to rush to get Deion Lewis back in the field. And to be honest, I don't even know if he's the same player after this.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's what we've been hearing from our injury expert at Fantasy Pros, is that this Deion Lewis injury is pretty serious. He's probably not going to be himself the rest of the year. With that being said, I mean, Bill Belichick even came out and said, when you haven't played in a year, well, you just haven't played in a year. So what it comes down to is they're going to ease him back in. Yeah, they've got a nice matchup this week, but you should not be playing him until he actually gets some touches and we see that he's actually going to be used in this offense, because what they have right now is working. And I see no reason why Deion Lewis is going to be used this week or is really even fantasy relevant next week.
Agreed. For me, if you have someone in your league that would try and trade for him, I would be willing to trade him
away.
It's
a good time.
Just because you just sell him on the hype and the fact that he's going to be back. Like, they activated him. I'd sell on that if you're able to before your trade deadline comes, because I don't even know if I would feel comfortable. Even if he's active this week, I don't feel comfortable starting him. They're probably going to blow out San Francisco. And why rush him back?
Mike, let's move over and talk about some of the rankings here for Week 11. And, you know, we've got the obvious guys, Marcus Mariota against Indianapolis, Russell Wilson against Philly. We don't need to talk about them because everyone should be starting them anyway. Kirk Cousins at home against Green Bay's horrid secondary. Let's talk about a few players that are kind of on the fringe, though, that a lot of people are asking about and wondering if they should put in their fantasy lineups. We'll start with Dak Prescott face Baltimore. Now, he's been really good, but this Baltimore defense is much improved from what we've seen in the past couple of years.
This matchup actually suits Dak Prescott really well. And the thing is I think Dak Prescott is an every week starter. Ever since his first NFL game against the Giants, it was a divisional game, you know, in his first game. It's a tough game to walk into. So he didn't have the greatest game against the Giants. But since that time, he has totaled at least 18 fantasy points in every single game. And he did most of that without Dez Bryant. He still hasn't thrown for more than 292 yards. So he's getting it done in multiple ways with his legs, throwing the ball. He has multiple touchdowns in each of the last four games, including three touchdowns in two of them. Like, Dak Prescott is so impressive. And this offensive line allows him to do the work he does. It allows Ezekiel Elliott to operate. The reason I love him in this game is because Ezekiel Elliott, while I love him and you're never going to sit him and all that, he's going up against a Baltimore defense that is arguably a top three defense against the run. They allow just under 3.4 yards per carry. There's only been one running back all year to average more than 3.6 yards per carry, which
That's
is just
a great stat.
It's a ridiculous stat, and honestly, one that I'm just waiting. I would think that Zeke would be able to do it, but I think his upside is capped here. And, you know, throwing out that stat on Dak Prescott and how he hasn't thrown for much yardage, it actually suits what the Ravens do, because dating back to last year, the Ravens have held 10 of 17 quarterbacks to fewer than 200 passing yards. So, but the thing that where they're struggling is the touchdown department. They've allowed 16 passing touchdowns over the last eight games, multiple touchdowns in five of them. I don't think that they have a cornerback to match up with Dez Bryant. Jimmy Smith is probably going to be the one that they're going to attempt to do, but considering they struggle in allowing touchdowns, and that's where Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant have succeeded, I do like Dak Prescott a lot this week.
Jimmy Smith is a really physical football player, and that's what gets Dez Bryant really involved in games, is when he's getting pushed around, he gets excited, and he goes out there and he competes. And when you get a Dez Bryant who's competing, man, it could really be something special.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that Dak offers it with his legs, too. And, like, the threat that they can't put a safety over the top with Dez either. It's weird because he's averaging 18.1 yards per reception this year, which is sky high. Like, his previous career high was 15. So Dak's targeting him downfield because he's only averaging 2.6 yards after the catch. So it's really weird the way things have worked out. Dez has now scored three touchdowns in the last four games. With Dak progressing, Dez is only going to get better. I know his target numbers have been up and down, but this is a week where I like both of them just because, like I said, Ezekiel Elliott's going to be going up against a really, really tough run defense.
Now, one of these quarterbacks that's on the fringe that I'm really high on this week is Tyrod Taylor. He's coming off the bye. He's at Cincinnati, which isn't the best matchup. But if you look at his game log, week two, 25 points. Since then, Every single week, he scored at least 15 fantasy points. That just doesn't happen with quarterbacks. He has been remarkably consistent. I think he's a sure bet to get 15 plus again, maybe 20.
I would agree with you, actually. And Cincinnati's not the defense that they used to be. Each of the last five quarterbacks that have played against them, or I should say teams, because Cody Kessler and Kevin Hogan combined, but each of the last five teams have combined 18 points at the fantasy, at the quarterback position. So the only two quarterbacks that haven't totaled 18 fantasy points against the Bengals this season were Ryan Fitzpatrick and Ryan Tannehill. Tyrod Taylor's obviously been playing a lot better than them. There's actually been four games where they've allowed three or more touchdowns. So Cincinnati's defense is just not the same. You know, you saw Odell Beckham put on a show. I know he didn't even finish with 100 yards, but what he did to Adam Jones was it should be against the law. Like that was probably the best run route that I've ever seen run in the NFL. The way he You're not supposed to be able to turn and move that quick and plant your foot and go and dance the way he does. I don't know. It's just, it was ridiculous. But yeah, the Bengals are not somebody I'm worried about anymore. It's one of those things, like every year you have this thought in your mind that there's defenses that are just lights out. You don't want to attack them in fantasy matchups. You want to stay away from them. Cincinnati was that team last year, and it always takes a little bit of a time to warm up to say, okay, maybe they're not the defense that they were in years past. Well, you know, looking at the season, they are a defense that you should probably attack in fantasy matchups.
Plus, Tyrod's averaging 48 rushing yards over the last 4 weeks. I mean, 4.8 fantasy points. It's just a gimme for a quarterback when he gets that kind of production with his legs.
Yep. His floor is super high, so therefore you don't have to worry about him busting.
Now, on the other end, there's someone that experts, our expert consensus ranking has Blake Bortles number 14 this week at Detroit. And yeah, Detroit is horrid, but Blake Bortles might be the worst quarterback in the NFL. Is 14 too high for him?
I think it's right. It's about right. The reason I say that is because what I do, I cover a lot of DFS, and in DFS, he's definitely not a cash play. Like, you don't want to play him in like the safe games, but if you're playing in a tournament and you're looking for upside, he offers it. So I think by ranking him at 14, you have some upside built into it. And you also have some downside built in where he's still Blake Bortles and he's still not a very good NFL quarterback. Speaking of, you know, running with the legs, I was surprised to find when I was doing my research on Bortles this week that he has actually scored 27 fantasy points with his legs this year. And that's more than I would have expected. So he's averaging 3 fantasy points with his legs. So that's almost essentially a touchdown per game that he's averaging with his legs. The weird part with him that kind of struck me weird, because like I said, I did a lot of research on him this week. He's hit the 300-yard mark just one time in his last 7 games, which was something he was doing regularly last year. So Bortles, I don't know. If you play him this week, I just tell you this. Don't watch the game. That's the best way I could put it, because you don't want to see how he gets there, but he does score fantasy points, you know, it seems in garbage time, and this could be one. The thing I would worry about though is that Detroit is going to get Darius Slay back. He's their top corner, and it seems like DeAndre Levy might come back. He's been out since week one, and he was kind of like the centerpiece of their defense, and that's when they kind of fell apart. And I think he practiced today, so he's looking like it's possible that he plays this week. So it's something to monitor, but just know that if you play Blake Bortles, you're taking a lot of risk.
Slay is no joke. When I heard that he was coming back, I moved Allen Robinson down about 5 spots in my weekly rankings. I'm not messing around with that guy.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty smart thing. I think he graded out as PFF's number 2 corner last year, and then he's number 8 this year.
Yeah, he's a remarkable talent.
Yeah. Definitely.
Mike, let's move over and talk about running back. And we've got to start with Ryan Matthews. Tug Peterson came out and said Darren Sproles was the starter. Then they handed the ball to Ryan Matthews 19 times for 109 yards and 2 touchdowns. What's going to happen this week against Seattle? Is he startable? Is he even going to play? I mean, we can't trust anything with Tug Peterson.
You know what's funny is, like, so on Twitter, of course, everybody after, you know, you talk about players and you write off players and things like that. Everybody, when someone has a big game like Ryan Matthews did last week, a lot of people will come out of the woodwork saying, oh, why didn't anybody predict this? And this was one where it was impossible to predict. There was literally no way that you could have done it, because Ryan Matthews had played just 8 snaps in each of the last 2 games. Nobody performs on 8 snaps. Even if you were to tell me that he would have played 26 snaps, I wouldn't have felt like he was a must play, but he got 21 touches on 26 snaps. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, every snap he was on the field, essentially, he was touching the ball. And it's funny too, because a lot of people last week tried talking to me about Darren Sproles, and I said that I just really couldn't fully trust him. And they're like, wow, he's a starter. And I said, I wouldn't put it past Doug Peterson to put Ryan Matthews back in there. I really wouldn't. And lo and behold, it happens. With that being said, you cannot trust him like at any point, just because we know what Doug Peterson's doing. He wants to involve everybody. This matchup against Seattle, it's weird because each of the last four running backs that have played Seattle, they've totaled at least 21 carries. So that's
interesting.
It is, because that's usually not the case with Seattle. But now with Thomas Rawls potentially coming back, with Seattle playing, they could do more of a ball control style offense. For me, Ryan Matthews, you cannot play him. If anything, I would trade him away. It's just too frustrating, because it's not like, and that was my response on Twitter, was that you can't predict this game. Ryan Matthews has always been a really good running back. It's just, if you're playing eight snaps, I don't care if you're Julio Jones, I'm not playing you.
There was one expert, just one. I'm doing the accuracy, expert accuracy rankings report right now. And there was one expert who recommended starting Ryan Matthews last week. It was the franchise from NFL.com. He had him ranked number 21. That's a great call. I don't know how he did it, but yeah, I agree with you. Trade him now if you can. I'm not starting him. ECR this week, that's expert consensus rankings. They have him at number 25. I've got him down at 30 just because I can't trust him. Seattle's defense is really good. I don't think he's going to get the kind of touches he did last game. So I'm recommending away from him unless you're just in a tough spot.
I would agree with you that, yeah, there are a lot of the production that Seattle has allowed has been receiving, because they're allowing just over 3.4 yards per carry. So yeah, I'm not playing Ryan Matthews if I can help it this week.
Now, the guy right ahead of him in ECR, number 24, is another running back I'm super skeptical on this week. It's James Starks, for the same reason. He didn't really get any touches last week. I'm not sure that he will again this week. Now, it's a good matchup, but Green Bay just seems set on throwing the ball a ton.
Yeah, I don't think they have a choice, Green Bay. Their defense is so bad that they have to throw the ball. Like, that's why Aaron Rodgers, I actually said, it's funny because right after it was the Dallas game, I think it was, where everybody panicked about Aaron Rodgers and they were saying that, you know, he's not even a top five fantasy quarterback anymore. And I actually viewed it as a possibility to buy him, because going forward, I saw a lot of pass attempts in his future with the way the defense was playing. And lo and behold, since that time, he's averaging over 45 pass attempts per game, which is the most in any span over his career. And when you give him that many pass attempts, it's going to equal fantasy points. Now, with James Starks coming back this year, he struggled to run the ball well. He has just 75 yards on 31 carries. So you would expect him, you're like, oh, well, it's Washington, which it is a really good match. They're allowing 4.6 yards per carry on the year. They've allowed 11 rushing touchdowns, but they don't allow anything receiving. On the year, they've allowed just 222 receiving yards to running backs. No running back has topped 31 yards through the air against them. So for me, James Starks' ceiling is really, really capped, even though this is a good matchup. And I could see Washington hanging some points on Green Bay. They're a defense that has allowed four of the last five teams to score 30 or more points against them. The only team that didn't score 30 in their last five games was Matt Barkley and the Bears.
Yeah, I could see that one.
So yeah, I don't see James Starks piling up 18 carries or anything like that. So for me, I think he's fine as like a flex play, but nothing more than that.
You know, Starks can catch the ball to the backfield too. So I think his floor is pretty high, but I, once again, I'm not recommending starting it. There's a few guys I like more than him that are ranked lower in ECR, and one of them is Chris Ivory of Jacksonville. We already talked about that game, and Detroit's defense is really bad. They got a new offensive coordinator, and he seems to be a guy who wants to run the ball. Now, Chris Ivory hasn't been great this season. The Jacksonville offensive line, there's definitely better ones in the league, but I think Chris Ivory is startable this week at Detroit. What do you think, Mike?
I worry about this one just because the only time I want to start Chris Ivory is where I see a good game script for Jacksonville. And with the way that Detroit's our offense has been playing, I think that they're an offense that can give Jacksonville fits. The reason I say that is because even though Jacksonville has really been coming together as a defense, Jalen Ramsey is going to be really good for a long time. He's been limiting wide receiver ones on opposing teams, but Detroit doesn't really have a wide receiver one. They're not going to put Ramsey on Golden Tate. He's probably going to match up with Marvin Jones because he's the most physical. And Golden Tate has been wrecking defenses. They kind of went back to what he was doing last year after I just see Detroit, rather than getting into Detroit a lot, I see Detroit putting up points, and therefore it's going to be rough for Chris Ivory to see the field. He doesn't really do much work in the passing game. The only time he's going to really get on the field is when they're in the red zone, and that's far and few between for the Jacksonville offense. Now, last week, I wanted to like Chris Ivory a lot against Houston, and I had some really smart people talk to me about it, and they talked me off of it, and I'm glad they did, because he turned out to be a bust in a great matchup against Houston. It was a close game, and he still didn't do anything fantasy-wise. So for me, I don't trust anybody in that Jacksonville backfield.
The offense that I don't trust anyone in, at least in the backfield, is the New York Giants. Let's see. They've got Rashad Jennings, and they've got Paul Perkins, and I'm not sure who's going to get the carries. They've both been getting about 8 to 10 every week. Is that going to keep up, or is one guy going to take over here?
Yeah, this is an ongoing conversation that I've been having with Nathan Yonke, my coworker at PFF, and he's been really interested in Paul Perkins because, you know, he's seen his snap counts rising over the last few weeks. And, you know, we were excited about Perkins going to the Giants. We felt like it was a job that he can win. The area where he's been struggling is pass protection, and that's why he hasn't. I think that's why he never fully took the job. Rashad Jennings is one of the better pass blockers in the league, so that's why he's staying back there. Eli doesn't have great protection up front, so they a lot of times they'll keep Jennings into pass block. So I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of Rashad Jennings or Paul Perkins right now. Until one of them has the clear-cut role, I'm probably not starting either of them.
You know what's amazing is both of these teams we just talked about, the Detroit Lions and the New York Giants, I don't think of them as really good football teams at all. They're both in the playoff picture right now. They're number 4 and number 5 in the NFC. And I'm looking at the playoff picture, and it just looks ugly all around. There's only a couple really good teams. You've got the Chiefs, Pats, Texans, Ravens, Raiders, and Broncos in the AFC. I mean, really the only two teams that I think can do damage are the Chiefs and Pats.
Yeah, it's a weird year in the NFL. You don't really know of the standout teams. You're just, like I said, you said it. The Patriots are the only ones that you'd feel really, really comfortable about. I would argue that the Steelers seem like they'd be a team that could make a run, but they would need home field advantage to do it because Ben Roethlisberger just doesn't play well on the road. Everybody thinks that, you know, everybody knows the Drew Brees splits, but not many people know about Ben Roethlisberger and how much he struggles on the road. So, The thing with the Giants, though, their defense is really good and they're starting to come together like a lot more in recent weeks, where if Eli Manning catches fire, they're a team to watch because Eli Manning, we've seen him make runs through the playoffs before because Eli Manning he's the streakiest quarterback in football. He could look like Blake Bortles at times, and then sometimes he could look like he's Tom Brady. And, you know, this Bears defense this week could be a team that will make him look like Tom Brady. The Bears defense on the road is averaging, they're allowing 29 points per game. So this should be a week the Giants should score a lot of points.
Yeah, the Giants, their pass rush is so much improved. And, you know, when they won the two Super Bowls, that's what they had going for them. They were closing out games because their pass rush was able to put pressure on the quarterback. And in the recent years, that hasn't been the case. The quarterbacks have been making comebacks because they can't put any pressure on them. So I think the Giants are a legitimate playoff team. I don't see them making any kind of Super Bowl run. But, you know, I would have said the same thing a few years ago, too.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah, I think we're all in that same boat.
You know, the one team that really intrigues me is the Miami Dolphins. And I know a lot of people are going to kind of cringe when you hear that. They're 5-4 right now. JJ is running really well. And their defense, I think, is turning into one of the top 5 or 6 defenses in the NFL. And nobody's really talking about them.
They've been getting better. There's no doubt. Like, their pass rush is getting better. I worry about their secondary. If they play a good quarterback and a good wide receiver, because their schedule has really lightened up over the last month or so. So I'm waiting to see them against a really good offense before I do that. I mean, this week they're going to get Jared Goff, so they're going to look great again. And it's funny, like, if someone's listening to this podcast and, you know, you play DFS, a lot of people are going to be playing the Miami defense. I would actually look on the other side of the ball too, at the Rams defense, because Ryan Tannehill, Brandon Albert, the left tackle, he's going to be out this week. And Ryan Tannehill, if there's one thing he struggles with, it's pressure. So, yeah, it's really, it's pretty remarkable what they've done with Jay Ajayi and in Miami, because he struggled throughout the beginning of some of these games and they continue to give him the ball. And then he finally just breaks it. Like, he wears down the defense and it's working. Ryan Tannehill, I don't think he's thrown more than 33 pass attempts since like back in week three or something like that. So they're definitely trying to limit the Ryan Tannehill exposure. But they're playing good football, like it's smart football. They're doing what they can with what they can. But once they run into a good team, I just don't think it's going to hold up.
Mike, let's move over and talk about some of the wide receivers. One of the guys on the fringe this week is Cameron Meredith. With the Alshon Jeffrey suspension, ECR has him at number 34. We already talked about this game a little bit at New York Giants. How do you feel about Meredith this week?
He's one that I'm not really too excited about. He's been a full-time player ever since basically when everybody was picking him up. He's been playing all the snaps, but over the last 3 weeks, he saw just 5 targets. So obviously something between him and Jay Cutler, like they don't mesh. He doesn't have Jay doesn't have confidence in him is what it comes down to. Because if anything with Cutler, he has a receiver he trusts, and a lot of times he'll pepper that guy with targets, and it just doesn't seem like Meredith's that guy. All of his production in week 10 came on the one play. It was the Hail Mary. And that was just a crazy play in itself. But for me, I want to see it before I believe it with Meredith. So I'm not really playing him. He's definitely someone that should be rostered at this point, because he's the lone big guy, number one target. But I think Eddie Royal and Zach Miller are going to be heavily, and I think they're going to start to see an increase in targets as well. So I think Meredith might max out around 7 targets a game. And I just don't know if that's enough coming from Jay Cutler, who's very hit or miss.
So would you start players like Corey Coleman and Devontae Parker over Meredith?
Devontae Parker depends on the matchup. I do like Parker's talent, but they're just not throwing the ball enough. That's why you're seeing Jarvis Landry, his numbers come down. They're just not throwing the ball as much as they used to. Corey Coleman,
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, this week I probably would play Corey Coleman over Cameron Meredith. I just want to see it first with Meredith before trusting him.
All right, let's talk about Tyreek Hill. He is a really special player. Andy Reid called his speed freaky. Just watch this guy play. He's something we haven't seen since Dante Hall, Devin Hester. He is just a unique talent. He's really something special. And he gets Tampa Bay, who has a horrible defense. Now, you wouldn't know that because they scored 24 fantasy points against Jay Cutler last week. But I think Tyreek can still put up fantasy points, even if Jeremy Maclin comes back.
Yeah, but it seems like Macklin's not going to. He's still not practicing, so I would assume that Jeremy Macklin's out for at least another week. Jeremy Maclin hasn't even been the Jeremy Maclin that we've come to know over the last few years. So the thing I worry about with Tyreek is that he still hasn't played any more than 60% of the snaps. Now, he's getting production in different ways. Like, it was touchdowns, because at one point he was catching a touchdown every 6 targets, which is just out of this world. But the one thing that I'm telling people to keep in mind is that he's had just 2 weeks with more than 38 yards. And if Jeremy Macklin's out, he's definitely someone that you would definitely consider. But just understand that there's going to be some volatility there. But, you know, the argument that can be made is that there's volatility with anyone in that wide receiver 3 range. And maybe they don't come with as much upside as Tyreek Hill, because, as you mentioned, Tampa Bay is a funnel defense. They stop the run pretty well. So it could be another week where Tyreek Hill does, you know, maybe he, I don't know if he catches 10 passes again, but he's definitely starting to see more targets. So he's definitely someone you could put in your lineup and hope that you get the upside out of him at least.
ECR has him at number 37. And the thing is, if I'm looking for a playmaker, a big home run threat, I think I'd rather have Will Fuller at Oakland or maybe even Sammy Coates at Cleveland. And ECR has them both all the way down at 51 and 58. And Tyreek's all the way up at 37. I'm not really sure that I understand that. But I think if you're in a deeper league, yeah, you can flex him. But other than that, I'm not trusting him this week.
I think the worries with Fuller is his injury and whether or not he's going to play. It seems like he's going to, but he's been battling injuries. Will Fuller, he's a weird one. He hasn't top I think he's topped 31 yards just one time in his last like six games. So he's a worry. Sammy Coates, the reason I think he's so low is it came out that he's got two broken fingers now. He only played, he only played two snaps last week. So I don't know if he broke his finger when he was dropping one of the passes that Roethlisberger threw his way, but yeah, Sammy Coates, I just don't even know if he's going to play at this point.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What about Eli Rogers? If Sammy Coates is out at Cleveland, how do you feel about him this week?
I think that's the weird part with me is like I'm an Eli Rogers fan. I think he's going to be a solid NFL player. I think it's working out in his favor now because there was supposed to be so many options that were kind of there for the Steelers passing attack. You know, before the season started, you thought there was going to be so many playmakers in this offense that they wouldn't even know what to do with them. Now it's kind of down to Antonio Brown and Eli Rogers, and then Le'Veon Bell, who is, by the way, he's 13th of wide receivers in targets per game. So it's kind of ridiculous what Le'Veon Bell's doing in the receiving game. It is, but it's because basically because Marcus Wheaton never lived up to what they wanted him to be. Sammy Coates has been hurting. Kobe Hamilton's not going to do much. Ladarius Green is just now getting back on the field. The reason that I think you can count on Eli Rogers another week, which I loved Eli Rogers last week against Dallas. This week, Brian Bodie Calhoun is now the slot cornerback for the Cleveland Browns. And he is someone that allowed two touchdowns last week in coverage against the Ravens. He's allowing a 76% catch rate this season, 15.8 yards per reception. So like he can be picked on, and considering all of the missing options, yeah, I like Eli Rogers. I think you could start him as a wide receiver 3 this week.
I want to talk about Robert Woods. He's coming off the bye, and before that, this is weird to say. He tore up the Legion of Boom for 10 receptions, 162 yards. What's he do against Cincinnati this week?
I don't know. I mean, Robert Woods, like, yeah, he had a good game, but I can't put much stock into it because Robert Woods, he's been someone that's been seeing five or more targets in like seemingly every game this year. And he hadn't done much with them. He had seen 10 or more targets in two games. He's only topped 51 yards twice. He's scored just one touchdown. I mean, if you're looking for a desperation, like a bye week filler, you could do worse for sure. Because he is the number one option on that team. It's just, you have to temper expectations. Don't expect 10 receptions again or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at his game log, though. Since week 3, 6 receptions, 7 receptions, 2, 5, 4, 10. So if you're playing in a PPR league, at least he's consistently getting the ball. But yeah, I'm right with you. It was a good matchup. And I know that sounds weird because it's Seattle, but Robert Woods runs over the middle of the field. Seattle leaves the middle of the field open. They cover the sidelines. They cover deep. And it was just a good matchup for Robert Woods. So, yeah, I think he goes right back into that range. 4 receptions, 45 yards, and probably no touchdown. He doesn't grab touchdowns. I don't think that's going to change. So I'm avoiding him. I know a lot of people are excited about him, though, so that's why I wanted to mention him. Number 36 in ECR, I'm not flexing him this week.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati does have some struggles in their slot. That's where I guess Drake Kirkpatrick and Adam Jones on the outside, that's they're better cornerbacks, I guess, even at this point. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not excited if I'm starting Robert Woods.
And Mike, finally, I want to talk about Michael Floyd, who's another player that everyone's really excited about. They're remembering that second half from last season when he just went off and he had 101 yards against San Francisco's defense. He's not going to do that against Minnesota, right?
I wouldn't think so. Michael Floyd, he's not playing all the snaps right now. He's played over 50% of the snaps just twice in his last six games, so he's not even a full-time player. And he plays in the perimeter, which is a problem because Minnesota, Terrence Newman and Xavier Rhodes are the perimeter cornerbacks there. And those two are just really, really good.
Rhodes going to play?
I don't know if Rhodes is going to play. That's actually that's one of the news pieces I haven't seen yet. If he's
and
going.
Eric Kendricks is a question mark. This Captain Minnesota Marlin. Defense might not look the same this week.
Yeah, no, that's exactly that's there's a lot of question marks surrounding this game. I'm wondering about Larry Fitzgerald's health, if he's going to be okay, how he's going to play. David Johnson has been seeing so many touches that his body's starting to wear down. I think 3 of the last 4 games he's averaged under 3.8 yards per carry. So yeah, there's a lot of question marks surrounding this game with injuries, which would definitely, you know, impact all your decisions that you'd make. But Michael Floyd, he's just difficult to trust. Carson Palmer not only lost his left tackle before their bye week, Jared Veld here, he's a big guy. And he, Carson Palmer has been sacked, I want to say 15 times in the last three games now. And he just lost his, one of his Pro Bowl guards, Evan Mathis. So the offensive line is kind of in shambles there. I love Michael Floyd's talent. I just don't like the situation in Arizona.
Now let's move over and talk about tight ends. I've got to talk about Julius Thomas because it's just driving me nuts. Every single week I see him in the top 10 for ECR. And if you look at his game so far this season, since week three, two receptions for 13, two for 28, three for 20, three for 28, two for 21, six last week, but for 24 yards. I'm just not buying him as a tight end one, even against Detroit.
No, I mean, Detroit, that's where you hang your hat, is they allow touchdowns. And that's why he's probably in there as a tight end one, just because they literally just allow touchdowns. That's all they do. And that's almost all you need in order to live up to a tight end one status in today's NFL. Julius Thomas, though, yeah, I'm right there with you. One of the stats I have here on him is that he has not topped 28 yards since back in week two. And honestly, there was actually only four games in 2015 where he topped 28 yards. He's been arguably the biggest bust that they could have signed as a free agent. They would have been better off just sticking with Mercedes Lewis.
I also want to talk about Eric Ebron, who is, I like this guy a lot. I think he's one of the top six tight ends in football, and nobody really realizes it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm stretching it here. But if you look at his game log, five receptions for 46, that's his worst game. That was week one. That's his worst game. Now, he's been hurt, but the past 2 weeks since he came back from injury, 7 for 79, 7 for 92, and he's not scoring touchdowns yet, but he's a good red zone target, and I really think he's the best receiver on this Lions team. They're going to be throwing the ball a lot against Jacksonville this week, and we have Ebron at number 8 ECR. I've got him all the way up at number 4 this week. This is my biggest reach. I'm a big believer, though.
So I understand it. He's averaging over 7 targets per game. I get it. And I love it when tight ends are seeing that much volume. You know the touchdowns are going to come. He's a big guy. They don't have very many big bodies in that team that are demanding targets in the red zone. Here's the concern for me with him this week, because I'm usually on him as a tight end one as well. Jacksonville has allowed just one. They've allowed just one tight end to top 11.5 PPR points, and that was Delanie Walker. And they've had some decent competition. So all these names I'll rattle off for you have scored fewer than 11.5 PPR points. Antonio Gates, Dennis Pitta, Dwayne Allen, Zach Miller, Travis Kelce, CJ Fedorowicz. All those guys scored fewer than 11.5 PPR points against Jacksonville. So while I do have my concerns, I do understand exactly where you're coming from, because as I mentioned, the targets are there. And if you're getting targets at the tight end position, touchdowns will come. He's had, you know, as you mentioned, 14 catches for 171 yards over the last two games. So there's a little bit of risk and a little bit of reward, but I like it. I like your call. It's a bold one, but I like it.
You made me a little bit nervous there with those stats against Jacksonville. That's kind of scary, but I'm sticking to it. I like Ebron, and especially if you're in a dynasty league, I think this is a guy that right now, even though he's been playing well lately, I think you could buy low on him right now because his stock isn't really high. I think it's only going to get higher from here, and I think going into next year, he's going to be a consensus every single year, top five tight end, and he may eventually move into that top two range in the position. He's really, really good.
Yeah, that's a good call. And Matthew Stafford's young, and so if Stafford likes throwing to him, there's no reason to go away from Ebron. Another name I'll throw out there before we get out of here is Jerick McKinnon. If you're in a dynasty league, go after Jerick McKinnon. I know a lot of people are like, well, he's been pretty bad with the opportunity he's been given this year, but understand that his running style is similar to that of maybe like a Le'Veon Bell, where they're very patient runners. They wait for a hole to open up and then they hit it. The problem is that Minnesota has lost both their tackles. They've been dealing with some injuries on the interior. And this is not an offensive line that a patient runner can run behind. You need just a straight downhill runner. But even then, you know, nobody on Minnesota has averaged more than 3 yards per carry. So it's not just Jerick McKinnon. It's just a bad offensive line. So Jerick McKinnon's a name that I would definitely look to buy low on.
That's a good call. I feel like everyone listening knows that I've just eaten crow on Jerick McKinnon all year, because I keep saying, even with the offensive line, he's just so good. Like, you got to maybe consider playing him in GPP, but You know, it hasn't worked out yet. Let me ask you this question, Mike. Say Minnesota rebuilds their offensive line. They get healthy. Let's just say they have a middle-of-the-road offensive line next year. How high is he going to be taken in drafts?
If Teddy Bridgewater is back, it helps because he presents a dual threat. Sam Bradford's a pocket passer. Nobody has to worry about that. So I think that Jerick McKinnon would be drafted as, well, after this year, people would be scared to draft him. But me personally, I think that he would be, I'd have him definitely in the RB2 conversation. I think before this year, you would have been like, oh, if Adrian Peterson's gone, they got a solid offensive line. He's in the conversation for an RB1, but it's going to take a little bit of time to rebuild that offensive line. So for me, he probably tops out at an RB2, but in Dynasty, we're looking further down the road. So that's why I like stealing McKinnon from the owner right now.
All right, Mike, let's close this out by talking about some streaming defenses that people can pick up. Who do you like this week?
Love the Giants. I wrote an article on that, is that they were, I think it was just like 11% owned. And at home, they're averaging, I think it's over 3 sacks per game now. And, you know, playing against a Bears offense that just lost Alshon Jeffrey. Jay Cutler just looked like hell. Jay Cutler has actually been sacked on once every 9.4 dropbacks. No other quarterback in the NFL has been sacked more than every 12.4. So that's like a big gap. So Jay Cutler is going to be sacked in this game. He doesn't have a go-to option in the passing game right now. It's going to be a mess for them. And he's going to have to throw a lot because the Giants are going to put up points in that defense. You could look at them. As I mentioned, the Rams, you probably can't stream because they're probably owned. But the Miami Dolphins against rookie Jared Goff, they're one I would look to play. And I think the one last one I was looking at was Oakland. Oakland has been a lot better defense than people realize. Since the first couple weeks, like, they had a brutal start to their schedule. They played, it was Breeze, Matt Ryan, I think Mariota was in there, Phillip Rivers. Ever since that time, they've been a lot better on defense, and they're playing against a Houston team with Brock Osweiler, who throws for like 3 yards per attempt. So
yeah. Oakland's got some really nice young pieces in their secondary. I think this time next year, we'll be talking about the Raiders as a Super Bowl contender. I don't know, maybe it'll happen this year, but I really like what they have going on there. And I don't think they've even played up to their capability. Everyone was talking about them as maybe emerging as a top 5 defense this year. It definitely hasn't happened, but when Khalil Mack gets going, this defense could be real difficult for some teams to deal with.
Yep, I was one of those people that believed that Oakland would be a lot better defense than they were to start the year. But as things start to turn around, they're not playing as great of competition. So they're starting to get a little bit of their mojo back. Khalil Mack is starting to play a lot better. So yeah, I definitely look for Oakland. If you're looking for a streamer outside of those top few options, Oakland is definitely a high floor option at that.
I'm going to say kind of a contrarian play here. If you're in a deeper league and a lot of these defenses are taken and you need to find someone, it's really ugly. I know you guys are going to hate me because they gave up 36 points last week to Tampa Bay, but the Chicago Bears, if you look at their game log, 10 points, 5, 10, 10, 9, and then the stinker last week after the bye. I think they came back from the bye just a little too relaxed, and they're going to come back trying to prove something this week against Eli Manning, who throws for a lot of interceptions. I think that Chicago could be a nice, reliable defense this week.
Yeah, that's like a contrarian play. I mean, that's definitely something that would be against the norm. I just worry about the Bears on the road. They've been a really bad road team this year. They've been really good at home. They're only allowing 17 points per game at home, but on the road, they've allowed at least 23 points to every team and an average of 29.
All right, Mike. Well, that's all the questions we have for you today. Thanks for coming on, and looking forward to seeing how our picks work out this week.
No, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, Mike. Take care. All right, and for those of you listening, if you haven't already, please do us a favor and subscribe. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. It really helps us out. We've got one more show coming this week, and it's with Notorious from Roto Grinders. Last time he was on the show, he gave great advice. He told us who he was going to pick, and then he won $100,000 that week. So make sure to tune in. He's going to give great advice again. I'm looking forward to talking to him, and I hope you guys listen. Thanks for listening. And enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. But I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.